Welcome to the Broadcast Dialogue Podcast, the show all about the media industry in Canada.
Well, welcome to the first edition of the Broadcast Dialogue Podcast. This is the inaugural program, and we're taking some time with the founder and current editor emeritus of Broadcast Dialogue, the one, the only, Howard Christensen. Welcome.
Thank you.
How is retirement treating you?
You know what? I am really doing an awful lot of things that I thought I wouldn't be doing. I thought it would be just like retire and lay back and soak up the sun or something. Doesn't work that way.
I thought we, a lot of readers of Broadcast Dialogue over the years probably have a good idea of who you are as a publisher. But I know that a lot of the readers will want to know a little bit more about you and, you know, how you started out, where you're from, and these types of things. I understand that you're Toronto born and bred. In the era of Toronto the Good, what was life like growing up in Toronto?
Very innocent, absolutely innocent. I mean, I was 8 or 9 years old when I rode the Toronto subway unescorted. Today, of course, that would be a horror show. But back then, it was, yeah, okay, off you go. But living on Fox Bar Road, right at Avenue Road in St. Clair, walking across to Yonge and St. Clair, for example, that was just a thrill. Even those, you know, back in those years when Chum first came along and south of St. Clair on Yonge Street, I remember pressing my nose to the glass at that radio station going, wow, I can't believe this is really cool, wow. Although, I don't think those were the exact words I had in my mind.
Did that sort of ignite your, you know, a lot of us had radio dreams when we were young. Is that what did it for you?
No. Frankly, I fell into radio. It wasn't planned at all. I was looking for a job, and I found a job selling advertising time way back in 1969. And that's how it started. From there, from this promotion company that I began with, I moved on to Chum FM in Toronto. And then from Chum FM selling, I moved into broadcast journalism. And my first radio station as a news guy was CHAM Hamilton.
How did you leap from sales to news?
Yeah, it's an interesting story. I when I worked at Chum and Chum FM, a lot of my friends, it turned out, were the jocks, but news guys. I just had a lot of really interesting friends in the news department. George Ferguson, Fred Ennis, Brent Slidholm, Ron Knight. I had a lot of rapport with those guys. I really, really enjoyed what they were doing, and they were kind of mentor-like to me. And so I just packed in sales. Mind you, I wasn't that good at it anyway. Packed in sales, went over to and got a job in news.
They are a unique bunch, aren't they? The newsroom guys.
They really are.
They have a different outlook on things.
Hilarious people. Very, very funny people. God, it was hilarious.
They have gallows humor. The newsroom people.
Absolutely.
You know.
Much like the old MASH series, you know, all that stuff was going on in the operating room and MASH. Total black humor while people were doing the best they could to make things work.
And you, as I understand, did a fair amount of movement up in town to town, up and down the dial during that phase of your career?
Yeah, from CHAM, I went to CKJD Sarnia and spent a little time there in news, and then from there over to Chime, CHYM in Kitchener. I spent about a year and a half with Chime. During my days at Chime, I worked a Monday to Friday work week, and on weekends, for a number of months, I did overnights at Chum AM, when Chum AM was still the rock and roll king.
Wow.
In Toronto. And then from Chime and Chum, the combined duo, I went to CFRB in Toronto and spent about 3 years with them before moving to sister station CJAD in Montreal.
Those were the days of the mom and pop owners, wasn't it?
In the case of Chum and CKJD, it was owned by Keith Dancy at the time, or they were owned by Keith Dancy. Chime was owned by McLean Hunter, so that wasn't a mom and pop. chum. That was Alan Waters, Mr. Waters, and CFRB was. It was actually Argus Corporation, Conrad and Black. You can believe that. Standard Broadcasting was owned by Argus way back then. The mom and pops were, the ones I worked for were as engaged with the operation as we were. They were excited about creativity. They were excited about all kinds of things that involved making the station sound better all the time. Of course, they were involved in the sales productions. Of course, they were. But they seem to be far more engaged in the product than they are now. And that's an impression. I'm not sure that's a fact, but it's my impression.
Tell me about the early days of BN. How did you end up there?
The early days of BN for me was I started the broadcast news in 1977. So I was working on a rim, much like a newspaper rim, where you got sports guys and radio, regional guys and national guys and international guys working around a rim with this brand new device called a computer, of all things. Very strange. It had a keyboard on it, a little TV screen. You wouldn't believe it, but I was working on it. It's called the Hendrix. But anyway, we did an awful lot of work that way, sending up material for the wire service, the BN wire service. We also had a voice operation that I eventually became involved with, BN Voice, sending out voice clips from spots regionally and worldwide. Of news events were going on. That was a lot of fun. But the big deal at Broadcast News occurred about 2 years later, 1978-79 period, when we introduced the BN Report, which was an hourly newscast, 4 hours, 4 minutes and 20 seconds every hour, 24 hours a day. And that was a big deal because there were a lot of stations right across the country were using the BN Report as supplemental to their own local newscasts, usually in the evenings and overnight. Some use it in the daytime. They use it as the opener before coming in with their local package, or they do the local package maybe 4 minutes before the hour and bring us in with the national news at the top of the hour. Live, and that was an exciting time for us. The next most exciting time for us at BN was the movement from 3K landlines to delivery via satellite, where we could get that wonderful 15K quality.
And I understand that you did quite a few of those broadcasts personally.
Yes, absolutely. I was one of the original anchors.
So you would be preparing your newscast, watching the clock to hit the top of the hour.
Yeah, I mean every hour it was a mad dash to put the whole fresh news package together. The news package I wrote for the on-air portion of BN was used to provide the news summaries for the wire. So we really were rushing, doing a heck of a job. Taking care of the tasking, as it were, for both the wire, for the audio room, for the national network. Not unlike, I guess, the folks today who are doing so much work for social media, for radio, for television, for their own Twitter accounts. It's just an extraordinary amount of work in the broadcast news business.
And I recall a story, or reading about a story, where you would entertain stations leading up to the mark.
Yeah, I did. If you were around back then, or even if now, I'm not sure. I haven't heard one of them lately from the setup area a minute before the newscast. But there's a double tone, 10 seconds. At 10 seconds, there was a double tone, a beep, beep. And I kind of punch up the network about a minute to the hour and just start talking. How you doing? What's going on? Hey, the Grey Cup game's on next weekend. Toronto's playing, Winnipeg's playing. Okay, I'm taking Toronto. Anybody want to bet me? Call me after the news desk. And just that kind of thing. And then I just natter on. Then I'd say, finally, the BN Report starts 10 seconds after the double tone. Beep, beep. And 10 seconds later, I'd, here's the latest from Broadcast News. I'm Howard Christensen. And just carry on for 4 minutes and 20 seconds. I came out of the booth, but a minute later, the phone's ringing. They want to take me up. I'm betting Toronto. They're betting Winnipeg. I think awesome. I probably took 6 or 7 bets from overnight guys, and I lost.
Uh-oh.
I sent out a pack of pilot checks to people, and for $1, like $1 checks, just sent them out. And one guy didn't cash his, and didn't cash it, and didn't cash it. I phoned him. I said, "Hey, you haven't cashed my check." He says, "Are you kidding? I framed it." he was so thrilled to have won that bet.
Well, you know, the other thing too is that when you have the privilege to be able to take a leadership position in the industry and provide a service out to the local broadcasters, that's a pretty hallowed position to hold. And I think that people really look up to that relationship, and they hold those people that provide that service in high esteem.
I believe you're right, but I didn't really take myself too seriously. So when I did start traveling for broadcast news and went to visit the various news stations, managers and news directors and program directors alike, you know, I'd go to the switchboard, for example, or the reception area, and the lady would say, "Who's calling? Who are you here to see?" And I tell them, and "What is your name, please?" I said, "Howard Christensen." "But you should have seen their faces. And I didn't understand it until one of the guys in the back room said, "You don't get it. Here in Kentville, Nova Scotia, this is huge."
Yeah.
That you're even coming through this door.
It's huge that you're even addressing the guys on the satellite feed.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fun. That was just, it was kind of like an overnight jock talking to overnight jocks, really. Kind of what it boiled down to.
Tell me about Ingrid. How did you meet Ingrid?
Ingrid was in Jamaica one year celebrating her graduation from university. Her parents paid the tab on that. She met some Canadians down there, and they got along just fine. One of the Canadians, of course, was, not of course, but one of the Canadians was a German-Canadian, so she could speak German with him, which made it even better, and they hung out for the 2 or 3 weeks they were vacationing. During that time, they got along so well that the Canadians, my friends Wolf and Liz Braun, invited her to come to Canada for a visit that following summer. That was in 1983. And after much hesitation, she did, not wondering why she wanted to go someplace that was just mountains and bears and trees. So she was somewhat shocked to discover places like Tim Hortons, for example. She said, "Whoa, look at all that stuff. Give me all of it." She was really excited at that. But that's how it worked. And there was a welcoming party for her. And I was kind of invited to come to this party because I was on vacation. And I got some hosting duties with her to, you know, take her around a bit, shore around. And there you go. One thing led to another.
Wow. What was the process like getting her imported into the country?
That was an amazing situation. I had a friend, Diana, who worked for Immigration Canada. And I said, "Guess what? I'm getting married." She said, "Really?" And then I talked a little more. "Yeah, but she's in Germany. I got to get her in." She says, "Give me your name and number. Give me all the stuff." I said, "I did." And Ingrid applied. Honest to God, from the day she applied to the day she became a landed Canadian, 3 weeks.
Wow.
Not 3 years, 3 weeks. She had to go to the Canadian consulate or the embassy in Bonn to get the paperwork done. And the Canadian there said, "Do we have to roll out the red carpet for you? I've never seen anything move this fast." And I just felt super lucky. I mean, really fortunate to know my friend Diana, whose last name I won't give you.
I understand that you referred to her as the geographic undesirable.
Sure, and that year we were dating. Yeah, she was my geographic undesirable, because it was way over in a place called Karlsruhe, Germany, and now, of course, was downtown Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
So we got on the phone a lot.
I understand that you were able to pull a few fast ones on her during the process.
There was one amazingly fast one. My friend at the time, the late Tom Rivers, was working mornings at CFTR Toronto. And Tom had a feature called The Call of the Day. Well, I told Tom, "I'm getting married. I'm going to marry her." And he said, "Give me your phone number." I said, "Why? Call of the Day." I said, "Okay." So he phoned her in Germany. And rather than using his usual voice, he, he put on a little, kind of a quiet little voice, and he said, "Hello, is this Ingrid?" And she said, "Yes, it is." "Well, this is Claire McKenzie calling from Immigration Canada." And so it went. And he says, "We don't have any problems. I don't see any problems with bringing you over. It's just we have one little item here that we have to take care of." He said, "What's that?" She says, "Well, Mr. We don't have Mr. Christensen's divorce papers from his third marriage." Oh, Ingrid freaked because I had never been married before. And she's going, "What? What?" "Yeah, it's true. I have right here the documents." She's rattling the paper on the phone. And she says, "Well, have you found him?" And he says, "Yes, I have." And Rick just really yanked her chain magnificently until finally he said, "We'll see you at the wedding. It's Tom Rivers in Toronto." And, of course, at that point, she called him a nasty name. And, of course, the sheep sound effect went over her, the profanity that she had expressed to Tom on the air. Anyway, that was a story. It was really terrific. About a week and a half later, I was in the barbershop downstairs from where I was working, getting my haircuts before I was heading over to Germany to get married, and the barber said to me, he says, "You're really going to do it?" I said, "Yeah, I'm really going to do it." "You're flying off to Germany on Saturday?" I said, "Yes, I am." He said, "Well, best of luck." And I said, "Thank you very much." Guy in a chair, three chairs down, turns to me and says, "Say hi to Ingrid for me."
Oh.
"What? What?" He says, "Yeah, I heard the call today." That's hilarious.
That's fantastic.
It really was fun. Great fun.
That's great. And the two of you really ended up forming not only a magnificent long-term relationship here, but also a business partnership to a large degree, through Broadcast Dialogue.
We did. We really did. Ingrid was working when I launched Broadcast Dialogue back in 1992. Ingrid was working for Volkswagen Canada as a training person. She did an awful lot of visiting dealerships, training people on various new models of cars and that sort of thing. And my friend Barry Hamelin, who worked with me at Broadcast News way back when, he'd kind of come over and we'd hang out for a bit. And when we actually, the conversation began one day, he said, we were looking at something, and we were looking at a magazine, and we were looking at something related to broadcasting. He says, "You know, Canada really needs a good broadcast publication." I said, "Yeah, it does." But the problem we had back then was, well, wait a second. Like, for example, an advertisement in one of the other publications, particularly that one glossy publication, you'd buy the ad now, but it would, at the earliest, it would be 6 weeks before it came out in the publication. Because it was a monthly publication, they had deadlines and that sort of thing.
Right.
We saw the need for far more urgency than that, and far more urgency just getting news out as well. So we came up with the idea of a faxed newsletter, and we called it Broadcast Dialogue. And that's how it started. Just a couple of guys sitting in the basement goofing around.
And then it became a monthly magazine as well, and a supply guide.
We added the monthly magazine a few years later, and that was a lot of fun and a lot of work, but it really was a heck of a product. Well, the other thing too was moving from fax to PDF delivery. We did that over the course of a year, letting people get the hang of it. We'd start off and, "You want to try PDF?" "Yeah, okay." No, "I don't want to try that new stuff." "Yeah, okay." It's kind of took us a year to do the whole transition to bring people over to PDF. But we finally did. And that saved us an awful lot of money on phone bills, because the phone bills at the time were outrageous. The PDF was a marvelous, marvelous software device. Still is.
Sure it is. Yeah.
Then we did the magazine. It got to the point, though, with the magazine after a few years that we were struggling a bit with trying to maintain it the way it is or was, and also carry on broadcast dialogue the way it was, the newsletter, the weekly. So we married them. We married the magazine to the weekly and continued on with the weekly broadcast dialogue, which also had elements of the magazine, a column or two, or some photographs from a broadcasting event, that sort of thing, but not nearly as expansive as the 48-page magazine.
In talking with many broadcasters over the last while, most people they have this memory that broadcast dialogue just sort of was always there. Was there a time between sending out that first fax and the PDF where you needed time to hit that sort of critical mass, or was it pretty quick?
It was pretty quick, but you've got to understand that at the time, it was very shortly after I had done a whole lot of traveling to radio and television stations across most of Eastern Canada and got to know so many people that I could phone them and say, hey, I'm going to start this thing. It's going to cost you this amount of money and yen. Yeah, okay, we'll try it. And so I at the beginning, I had no problem at all getting subscribers to buy into what I was doing. It was really great, the response I received. But I don't know that I could have received that response if I wasn't so well known at the time.
It was something you could easily leverage, not to mention the sales experience, too, I imagine, was huge, a huge plus.
Well, it was, certainly, and that certainly added a lot to getting those advertisers from the supply side, the software people, the hardware people.
Now, you've told me that Ingrid very much is the producer, and you are the editor and the writer. I can personally say that when we looked underneath the proverbial hood of broadcast dialogue, we just could not believe how well maintained that engine was, and it is truly the best managed subscriber group in Canada in this regard. And from what I understand from you, that's Ingrid's efficiency at work there.
It really is. And I hate to characterize it as German efficiency, but there's no other way to do it. She's absolutely a bulldog when it comes to chasing something down or to making sure her database is the supreme database anywhere, anytime. For example, if we hear that a fellow has left a certain station, we will chase him. We'll chase that a little bit. He's gone. Who's the replacement? So that will immediately impact the database. Where did he go? And that will impact the database. And it just goes on and on like that. And it's, she's had just a beady eye on this from the get-go. That directory of stations and organizations serving broadcasting is just, it's not perfect, nothing is, but it's the closest thing.
It's damn near perfection, to be honest. Yeah. Which I think is one of the reasons that the industry collectively holds you and Ingrid in such high regard. And as you were winding down to your last issue on June 30th, I know for a fact that you were receiving a lot of accolades and a lot of communication that previously, I'm sure you weren't aware of the impact you were having on people. I think that broadcast dialogue is as much about people as it is about news on the industry. How was that experience hearing from your readers?
You know, I'm almost in tears now. Thinking about just how much of an impact that had on us, on both of us. It was absolutely delightful, super, just great. I mean, when we announced our retirement, the emails flooding in, it was so gratifying to see what we initially had set up to do so many years ago, that we had achieved that. And the comments about our integrity and the respect for people who were being let go, being described as the glue that binds the industry. I mean, wow. Just wow.
It's a huge, huge legacy for those of us who will follow to live up to, but I'm so glad that we have that bar to try to achieve every week. I really am.
Well, I'm going to have to beat you up now and then.
No, I know you will. Which brings us to the role that you've kindly agreed to play going forward for a period of time, which is to be our editor emeritus and to be our voice of conscience, our voice of quality, and a motivator. How are you feeling about that?
I feel great about that. I really do. I worry a little bit about, you know, being the old guy and stepping on people's toes when perhaps I should watch where I'm stepping. But what I want to do is guide you without being a nuisance.
Well, you're doing a great job at that and hitting the mark perfectly. I know I speak on behalf of everybody here when I say we really appreciate it to no end.
Thank you.
Tell me about Howard and Ingrid's, what do you do for fun?
Well, we eat out a lot. We have a lot of fun doing that with our neighbors and friends, and the socializing is huge around here. I have a airplane, a little airplane that we enjoy from getting out in. It's a six-seater, and we've been over to Oshkosh, Wisconsin a few times for the big international air show and air week over there, camping out under the wings and just having a grand time. That's probably been my pride and joy for the past 10 years.
When did you start flying?
I got a license when I was 21 years old. No, I wasn't. I was 24. I started when I was 21. Got the license at 24,
I know that boaters say that boating is a money pit. Is it the same with airplanes?
Yeah. You know, the gasoline, the aviation fuel is so expensive, but yet it's probably the cheapest thing going when it comes to owning and operating an airplane. Between the insurance and the annual inspections that are required by the Department of Transport, the absolute, finicky approach to owning and operating an airplane is remarkable and remarkably expensive. So I think, want to buy an airplane?
Well, I really appreciate you taking some time to share a little bit about you and your experience with Broadcast Dialogue and your partnership with Ingrid over the years. And I know you're still going to be part of Broadcast Dialogue for some time to come. And hopefully we'll have another opportunity down the line to sit and chat some more about all things broadcasting.
Thanks very much, Sean. This has been great. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Broadcast Dialogue. For more information about the podcast or to receive exclusive access to our weekly briefing about the Canadian media industry, visit us at broadcastdialogue.com. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, connect with us on LinkedIn, and follow us on Twitter and SoundCloud.